I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to Pop Culture, the podcast that brings soft drinks to the top of the menu. I'm Kat Brown, jack of all trades and 4 years sober.
And I'm Helen O'Hara, film journalist, author and lifelong teetotaler. So hello, welcome back to Pop Culture, everybody. We've officially launched. Hooray.
It's not just a soft launch anymore. hard like alcohol-free whiskey. No. Lost that, Helen. What would be hard? Hard like the recyclable, positive feeling of a glass bottle of tonic water. Oh God, help me.
Hard like trying to carry out all my family's empty Schlur bottles after Christmas.
There we go. That's
hard
the
like
one.
Finding room for them in the fridge. There we go. That's the real challenge here. What have you been up to this week, Kat? Have you been doing anything exciting?
Well, part of the reason that the ability to lose words has completely fallen out of my head is that I had some friends round for the first mini book club of 2024 and then immediately got a cold from the excitement of having more than one person in my house that I wasn't related to. So, no, I'm just feeling slightly sorry for myself as I had that awful winter pre-Christmas cold that just seemed to be going around and around and around everybody like a hideous festive whirlpool. So just necking vitamin D and presumably hunting out drinks enriched with zinc and basically anything that anybody has even vaguely said might have cold-reducing properties. How about you?
I went through that all before Christmas because I had it for 8 weeks, that bloody cold. It was nightmarish. By the end, I was more honey and lemon than woman.
I mean, it was very professional of you, Helen, to get rid of your 8 week cold before we launched the podcast.
I try, except I was doing two other podcasts at the time, so it didn't work out super well. But hey, what are you going to do?
They're established, Helen. They're established. It's fine. What are we drinking today?
Well, today we are drinking Green Coke Sour Cherry. I think it's Coke. It's called Green Sour Cherry now I look at it, but it looks like a Coke can. I'm very confused, but no. I am excited because sour cherries are nice. I like them. I don't wish to be needlessly controversial, but that's my stance.
Oh my God, Helen. People are going to complain. They're going to write in letters, the Green Ink Brigade. I've actually had this before and still was just like, oh, I've got Green Coke in my fridge. It's that very distinctive typeface on the front of the can. If you look at it sort of sideways, you're like, well, that's obviously Coke because it's a bit twiddly and a bit fat.
That's what I thought. But it's just green.
It's just the goodness of green.
The goodness of green.
Chellies. Chellies?
Shall we crack it open?
Yes, please.
Ooh, yes. That is extremely genuinely cherry-y. And I say that because not everything that is quote-unquote cherry-flavoured tastes anything like cherries. Now, this doesn't taste particularly sour cherry to me, I'm going to be honest, but it does taste extremely actual cherry.
No, completely. I bought a cherry pie for book club and you could tell it was cherry because there were literal physical cherries in it, but it was just so gloopy and sweet and generic that it could have been a large but less exciting Mr. Kipling pie, whereas this is bloody good.
The idea of this one, I think, is that it is supposed to be no added sugar, no aspartame, and 100% taste with sweetener from stevia plant, which sounds a little bit like someone who doesn't speak English wrote it, but that's fine.
And I loved her work in Fleetwood Mac. This entire can is just filled with words to trip over the person who has only ever seen things written down. Is it aspartame? Is it 100% taste? Stevia, plant. Fortunately, the drink is absolutely delicious. Oh, Helen, we are slightly, not victimised, what's the other one? Vindicated. Cranking through to February. Because it said greencola.com on the back. So it...
Okay, so I didn't totally make it up. No.
I mean, they are, to be fair, flying fairly close to the wind, again, with that typeface and the green cola. Because isn't there a green Coke? There's some type of Coca-Cola that is allegedly slightly better for you. There's one that uses a slightly different type of sugar that's vaguely organic or something. Let me just have a quick look. Green Coke, a thing. Oh, my God. It was called Coca-Cola Life. Of course it bloody was.
Oh, not interesting. I was just speaking to someone who said that tasted awful. But I don't recall ever tasting it.
The can for Coca-Cola Life is the most unpleasant shade of green. According to the company, Coca-Cola Life is sweetened with a blend of sugar and stevia leaf extract, which is green, and both are naturally sourced. However, it has faced criticism that its sugar levels are still very high, which is not a problem for green sour cherry, not Coke, but cola drink adjacent.
Yeah, so this says it's got 3.3 grams of sugar per 330 milliliter can, which seems pretty low to me. Not nothing, but pretty low. I just did look up that Coca-Cola Life color. That's horrible. It looks like army surplus Coke, and I don't like it, and I don't approve. And I feel like if they address Santa in that color instead of Coca-Cola Red, he would not approve either.
Mm-hmm. This green sour cherry cola adjacent drink tastes much sweeter than it should, given the amount of sugar that is or isn't in it.
Yeah, well done us. But that's not the drink we're talking about today, is it? We are kind of focusing on a blank spot, let's be honest, in my knowledge, which is alcohol-free beer. I feel like we should probably define that some of the beers we may be talking about might have a tiny bit of alcohol in them, about the amount of a ripe banana. But generally speaking, alcohol-free beer seems to be one area where real progress has been made in the past 10 or so years. What can you tell me, Kat, about this vast blank spot in my knowledge?
Well, Helen, I probably wouldn't wave a beer in your face and go, Helen, you love sugary drinks, you're really going to love alcohol-free beer. I never drank beer when I was younger because it was so revolting, thin, incredibly sour, horrid. And I was always genuinely amazed that people would bother drinking pints of this stuff, whether they were at festivals, at university, when you could just have like gin and get drunk a bit more effectively, which seemed to be the point for everything. And when I stopped drinking years later, so 2019, and I did actually pick up a few of these, partly because my husband is quite into beer and during the pandemic ordered tons of alcohol-free beer to find some nice things to sort of go in the fridge without gently pickling himself every day. And my God, they've just improved so much. There's also, really interestingly, a lot of breweries, particularly in the UK, that are focusing exclusively on producing alcohol-free beers. So it's not just the big players. I really, for example, love Peroni Zero, which is obviously a 0% version of the very popular beer. And pretty much any big name alcoholic beer that you can think of will have a non-alcoholic alternative now, not just for people who are on antibiotics or pregnant or, you know, big losers, Dave, what are you doing? But just because lots of people are now reaching for an alcohol-free option because they're pretty delicious and the pressure to drink seems to be skipping somewhat now, particularly now that the younger generation have come in, as we've spoken about before, and people who would initially, well, for a long time have experienced that sort of pressure have perhaps got different responsibilities in their lives and realistically aged up to a point where hangovers are borderline unbearable. One of my favourite brewers is Big Drop, who, again, only make alcohol-free beer, and they do an absolutely beautiful take on an IPA, which is a slightly... I need a listener now to write in to describe an IPA, but it's almost quite floral, not as thick as something like a stout or a Guinness, either visually or taste-wise, but just quite a nice friendly drink, like really good in the summer. They've often got something tropical added or a little bit floral, but not in a sugary, elderflowery sort of way. They're just delicious because they're not sweet. A flavour profile all on their own. You will taste one eventually, and it'll be like nothing that you've ever tasted before.
IPA is India Pale Ale, so does that mean it was literally made for people in hot climates? I mean, am I making wild assumptions there?
I dimly remember that IPAs were brewed to take to India, so they had a slightly different brewing process, different to lager, but still lovely and fresh. And again, because it's not alcoholic, it has that slightly lighter taste and texture to it. BrewDog used to do, and I think has recently brought back, a brilliant one called Hazy AF. And I drank loads of those in the pandemic when I lost all my work and ended up stripping and repainting the front door for a week.
But your front door does look magnificent now.
That's gorgeous.
I just want to make that clear. So yeah, how long did it take you then to get into the taste of beer? Has this literally been a sort of 20-year odyssey to begin to like beer?
It definitely helped that I'd obviously drunk alcohol for a considerably long time before. But there are so many alcoholic drinks that you either like or you don't. They might just have flavours that are too strong. Like, I never really enjoyed Negronis, which were a very fashionable cocktail for a very long time and are quite bitter. I only really like particular whiskies, for example. So there was a lovely peaty one called Lafroy that I really enjoyed because it tasted a bit like you were tasting a world rather than just a whiskey. It was very atmospheric. And I like those drinks that almost sort of tell you a story more than anything. And I think that's something that I really enjoy from the non-alcoholic beers now, because whereas with a lot but not all of the alcohol-free spirits, there they feel that the story is missing, whereas lots of the things that have been made specifically as an alcohol-free drink by people who want that flavour and want something more and aren't just filling a gap, which always just feels a little bit miserable and joyless, they can just be really fun and interesting. And again, I really like bottles, and I don't want to go around drinking like Orangina all the time, because I just would, and my teeth would fall out in 2 seconds flat.
I love an Orangina. In fact, the one time I visited a brewery was the Guinness store in Dublin. Of course, it's a major tourist attraction in Dublin. Everybody goes. And if you, at least at that time, if you were not drinking Guinness at the end of the tour, they gave you Orangina instead.
So that's
my go-to beer substitute officially. On the one occasion where I had the chance to drink beer, I was like, no, give me the Orangina.
I dimly remember an urban myth that if you had a pint of Guinness and an orange, that was all of your nutritional needs covered. And I love the idea that maybe an Orangina provides the same thing.
Sadly, I've heard more about that rumour, and I believe it's something like 21 pints of Guinness and 5 pints of orange juice. And sadly, the amount of alcohol involved would offset all of the other nutrients that you are getting. But I believe it is true that women in maternity wards in Dublin used to be given Guinness because it was considered to be high in iron and things like that that they needed after giving birth. So I think that was true. I don't know if that's true of Guinness Zero. Maybe that's something we can investigate over the course of this series, because, hey, there may be women out there who are drinking it during pregnancy and don't know about its possible postpartum benefits.
We have also had some letters and some voicemails this week, which is lovely for our as yet unlabeled mailbag. I did suggest teabag to Helen earlier and then immediately had to recuse myself because I was giggling.
Hello and happy holidays. This is Eden Kendall, one of the hosts of Uncluttered and Unfiltered, the podcast for women over 50. And I love your topic of non-alcoholic drinks because I'm a runner and I regularly host bar trivia, and sometimes I can't have an alcoholic beverage because I might be hitting the pavement the next day. So I typically will bring kombucha with me, and the bartenders where I go don't mind it, and I just pour it over ice. It has that bite to it that feels like an alcoholic drink, and it comes in so many flavors, so it kind of hits the spot perfectly.
Helen, as the one remaining runner between us, what are your thoughts on kombucha the night before a race?
That was such a lovely message. And I am so, so on the same train. I think that's a great idea. Kombucha generally, very, very healthy. I like it. It is a little bit of an acquired taste because of that vinegariness, you know, and you wouldn't necessarily sit down and drink gallons and gallons of the stuff. But I think it's a great growing up sippable alternative. If you're at a bar doing a bar quiz and you just want something that you can regularly sip and be part of the conviviality of the moment, I think that's a really good option. And yeah, lovely to meet virtually at least a fellow runner, because it is something that we like gets talked about an awful lot on the course, actually. Is, you know, there are some people who run so they can have a drink afterwards, but then there are lots of people who are trying to figure out what else they can reward themselves with, or how to negotiate the nights when they're not drinking because they're running the next day. So yeah, super, super with that.
Yeah, Eden, thank you so much for getting in touch.
I actually did have a couple of other messages from runners on Twitter. We should probably call it by its other name, but I refuse. because I'm just not doing it. Quite a few people who got in touch there, because I asked about people's favourite low or no alcohol beers. So for example, John P. Merrigan said, I've been given pints of Erdinger Alkoholfrei, I think that's German, I'm very expert, at the finish of both the Berlin and Manchester marathons. Oh. I don't think I've ever enjoyed a drink more than those.
Oh, so lovely.
You see, it really is a thing for runners.
I just had a panic attack at the end of the London Marathon and was given no alcohol-free beer whatsoever.
That's where they're going wrong. That, if you'd had a alcohol-free beer, you might have been fine.
We also had an email from Abe Froman, which is, I think, my new favourite name in the world. Helen, you had an extra detail to shed light on this, didn't you?
Well, I'm not sure I do, but in the film Ferris Bueller's Day Off, he masquerades as Abe Froman, the Sausage King of Chicago, in order to get a booking at a fancy restaurant. So at least in my head, it is the Sausage King of Chicago who is now in contact with us, and that is very exciting.
He says, hello, really enjoying the pod so far. Thank you, Abe. Your 50 quid is in the post. I can heartily recommend Fever Tree's Mexican Lime Soda. They have a range of pretty overrated and expensive artsy mixers, but this one is excellent. I'd really like to see Arnold Palmer's on the map in the UK. Can you help with this, please? Nobody's ever heard of them, and they are exquisite. Even at really fancy places that stock the correct ingredients, you have to find a very patient bartender in a quiet moment who's willing to let you talk them through it. All you'd really need behind the bar is a jug of iced tea, and it'd be easy to make. You can add a splash of just about anything fruity to the mix too. Lime instead of lemon is great, a splash of orange or cranberry juice, syrups, etc., or mint. Let's normalise Arnold Palmer's over here. I want them in 500 milliliter bottles in the meal deal fridges. Thanks.
That is a good idea. So Arnold Palmer is, for anyone who doesn't know, he was a golfer, I believe, but his drink is iced tea plus lemonade in its classic combo. But all of those variations sound kind of interesting, actually.
I think the closest that we've got is Nest Tea, or what used to be called Lipton Ice. And I do dimly remember seeing that in the meal deal fridges at Boots, but possibly in slightly smaller bottles and perhaps just not as grown up looking or glamorous. But you're right, iced tea is something that we don't have enough of over here, I think. But tea as an ingredient in drinks other than kombucha is absolutely delicious and makes for really fabulous cocktails.
Hard agree. So yeah, it would be nice to have more of that here, and also just to explore iced tea a bit more. I mean, some of the iced teas I've had in the States have blown my head off with the amount of sugar in them. And you know me, I am a dessert girl. I have a lot of sugar tolerance, but whew.
Maybe, Helen, 2024 should be our bless your heart summer, and we just embrace our inner southern bitchy grandma and just start brewing jugs of the stuff.
Bless your heart.
Hello, this is Martin Austwick. I make Song by Song and Neutrino Watch, and my favourite soft drink is kombucha. It's a really, really weird drink. There's lots of different flavours. Some of those flavours are awful and some of them are just a bit strange. And my experience as a result of it being such a weird drink has been kind of similar to my experience of drinking beer when I used to drink beer. Because the first time you drink beer, like, no one likes the taste of it. It's not a nice taste. It's an acquired taste. And so is kombucha. So if you want a sort of slightly nerdy, neckbeardish journey into a drink that initially you think is sort of smells of stale puddles, like you did with beer, kombucha is the perfect drink for you. I can't really recommend a brand because there's tons out there and they're so different. Some are fizzy and some of them are just like a pint of mild.
Oh, I loved that.
Me too.
Thank you, Martin. It's such a perfect segue for this episode. I'd never really thought about kombucha being an acquired taste because it was a taste that I acquired from the off, whereas my husband just thinks it's like being hit in the teeth with a bucket of hammers. Kombuchas can all taste completely different, but I suppose the base flavour is just there and you either sort of lean into it or you don't. But it can be extra sweetened, it can have fruity bits in it, can have completely Looney Tunes flavours. And there's also just the ones that you can get in Pret if you want a very entry-level one at an enormous markup.
They are not cheap, but the comparison to craft beer, I think, is spot on because it does give you so much scope for argument, for development, and also, as you know, for trying your own one at home and experimenting with what you can do with it, which, you know, I have not had the guts to do yet. You're way ahead of me there, but it does have that kind of energy to it. He's absolutely right.
There's definite nerdery abounding. I don't think I ever recovered from looking at my SCOBY and being reminded of Martha, the brain in the jar mutant from the X-Men comics. But lo, Helen, we must segue on And why are we segueing, and where, and who, and for why?
We are segueing to our very exciting guest. So we have joining us Mike Baggs, who is one of the founders of Mash Gang, who are a no and low alcohol craft beer company. And I think they're going to go into other drinks as well. There's some little hints. If you read their interviews and you look around on their website and you listen to what Mike is about to say, spoiler, they're developing. Mm-hmm. But they are basically a group of school friends, including chief brewer Jordan Childs and CEO James Loveday, who decided to start a business during lockdown and settled on this no and low alcohol brewing concern because several of them had young kids and you couldn't, as you said, you know, sit around drinking every evening and then have to haul yourself out of bed and deal with life the next morning. The group of them are scattered up and down the country, but Mike and Jordan were in London recently because Jordan was actually nominated for Brewer of the Year.
Swoo.
Yeah, which is a big deal for, again, a low and no alcohol brewer. I think he's now been nominated twice, but it is still a very, very rare thing. Now, Jordan was sadly called away to deal with a tricky batch of product, but Mike was able to sit down with me and talk to me all about their journey. So here is Mike Baggs.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So yes, Michael Baggs, Chief Strategy Officer, we think you are.
That sounds about right.
Chief and founder.
Co-founder of Mash Gang. Yeah.
Fantastic. So tell me about Mash, because I feel like a lot of people started with or tinkered with brewing during lockdown. You guys, however, the Mash Gang has gone quite a bit further than that.
I caught COVID really early on. A bunch of my other friends did as well. And we all basically worked in industries that were shut down. So I was consulting at London Stadium at the time. All I did was basically help cancel Green Day and a bunch of other events. In the end, Jordan ran a big tattoo studio. Ben was Elton John's photographer. Alex and James both worked within trade in different ways.
You guys knew each other from school, is that right?
Yeah, we all knew each other from school. We had nothing to do, so we sat in a Telegram group because we were all basically furloughed or unemployed or underemployed because, you know, Elton John wasn't really touring. We started kicking around ideas and we started off making jam. We went from normal jam to extreme jam quite quickly. We're like, you know, why isn't there not pineapple jam? Why isn't there banana jam? And like, Jordan's not one to ever put anything down, so he picked it up and he was like, well, you know, there's this wonderful Mexican drink you make with fermented pineapple skin, so I'm going to try that. He got into fermenting, and then at the same time, we were sending each other beer boxes, and half of us have got kids, so, you know, you can't have a 9% coffee stout in the afternoon, because that ruins your evening. So we tried non-alcoholic beers, and we were like, most of these are pretty terrible. So we found one that was good, and we contacted a brewery called Northern Monk, and we said, your beer's great, how do we do this? And they asked Jordan what kit he was using, and he sent back a picture of a demijohn in, like, a rural container in Wales, and they were like, you're an idiot, come visit us, we'll have a chat. So he went there. We did some of our first brews with them, so we're very different to a lot of breweries in the UK. I took a class on leadership and politics at Harvard, and I had two teachers. One professor worked both Obama campaigns and one worked Mitt Romney's campaign, and they basically distilled in us this idea that decentralization is incredibly powerful. They were like, Obama decentralized power out, so like groups of kids in Florida could start, you know, running their own campaigns. Donald Trump decentralized a lot of power, so he owned that thing, but it was kind of spider and starfish style. Once you decentralize power, you can't bring it back. So, you know, his followers followers went a bit off the corner of the map, and there was nothing he could do. But then you get to companies, so people like Wikipedia, Uber, they basically decentralize power, lower barriers, and let people get in. And we were like, well, why don't we have a decentralized brewery? None of us wants to do this as a full-time job. We don't want to own a brewery. We don't want to deal with logistics and have vans and kettles and all that boring stuff. We haven't set up a company. So we all put a grand in, and Jordan learned how to brew, because we have to make our own products. But we outsourced actual production to Northern Monk, and we became a phantom brewery. We don't own our own one. We've brewed in London. We currently brew in Aberdeen in the UK with Fierce. We've brewed in Croatia. We've got a site in Chicago now. Jordan's over in Milwaukee in like a week or so's time setting up brewing there. And it's grown. The most unusual part of the story is that we are completely independent. We've brought in no external money to date. We started off with £5,000, no outside investment, and we've grown the business to, I think, £7.5 million valuation now.
Amazing.
And we've had listings in supermarkets. I got us a collaboration with Crystal Palace last Dry January, which is the first time our Premier League club had had a Dry January partner. Mm. We've made so many friends along the way. So the brand is essentially built around community.
Yeah.
And whereas a lot of people go like, oh, you know, beer drinkers are an interesting bunch, particularly craft beer drinkers. Like, we've had an amount of negativity in the early days, and we just won them over. Because when people would say like, oh, you know, it's rubbish, you know, where's the point having alcohol-free beer, we'd reply and we'd laugh at them and be like, well, you know, if you're gonna go down that route, why aren't you drinking sherry? And they're like, pardon? They're like, well, why don't you go get a £2 bottle of sherry and then distill it, so it's just get neat vodka. What's the point in drinking anything other than cleaning spirits? And they'll be like, okay, sorry. And we've had breweries that laughed at us initially, and they became our friends.
That was one of my questions, actually, is what is the sort of collegiality level of the non-alcoholic or low-alcoholic beer world? Like, is there a feeling of competition, or is there very much still a feeling of it's still such a thing that's growing from a low level to, I think, quite rapidly growing to quite a high level? So is there a feeling of people working together towards a sort of common goal almost at the moment?
Yes, there is.
Okay,
very
good,
much.
Good.
So craft brewing is beautiful. Like, half of us came from music initially. The music industry, for all of its pitfalls, is actually a wonderful place. It's very collaborative. Like, we create lots of space for people to come in. I think 20-something% of people that work in the music industry are neurodiverse. It's a wonderful, great open space. There's lots of terrible people in it, but as an industry, it's quite good.
Right.
And brewing's exactly the same. Lots of people from independent punk and similar actually moved over to brewing. And it's very collaborative. So, like, if you look at the other big breweries in the UK, Lucky Saint, Good Karma, Jump Ship, like, they're all friends of ours. Mm. Like, we all know them very well. Jordan and James went along and did a lunch and learn with Luke and Emma at Lucky Saint, like, a month or two back. The second they won Brand of the Year, I was texting Emma, congratulations. We're all friends.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I think the market is growing at such a pace. The market's way bigger than any of us could ever. Like, if we capture a percentage of it each, we're all multi-million pound companies. Mm. I think when you get to the size of a Heineken or a Diageo, you know, fighting over every inch of shelf space in a supermarket, it's like life and death. For us, it's not. We're still having fun and doing great stuff.
So what are your priorities as a company, though? When you're testing something out, I'm guessing, like, what is it that makes you all go, yeah, this one, I like this one, let's do this?
I don't think we've really talked this through publicly before, because I'm the strategy guy and I normally sit on a bunch of this stuff. We basically have two threads. We have one where we go, we want to do big, exciting, silly things. And that's the cornerstone of the business. So we do cereal beers and we do big stouts that have 2.5 tons of cherries in them and similar. Like, and everyone loves these beers, but they're the beers that people have one of.
Mm.
Or like, people rush out and get one. People don't buy a 16 pack of a sour mango margarita beer. But having said that, we did a collaboration with Vault City this year, which was Only in Dreams, which was a strawberry and lime margarita pickleback beer. And people reported buying like 4 or 5 pints of it one after another on tap, because they just loved it so much. So we do the big silly stuff. And on the other hand, we love the basics. It's really unsexy to say in no alk or beer in general, but we love dad lagers and we love no alk, like low alk beer. Bud Light, Michelob Ultra, Miller High Life, like, these are some of our favorite beers from when we were young.
Yeah.
Like, Jordan and I kicked around New York for a long time in punk bands, drinking questionable beer on the street corners. And we wanted to bring that back. Stoop, our lager, we spent a year working on getting the final version done, which is a terrible long time to spend on a single beer. And it's our highest rated beer. It's one of the top 7 globally ranked lagers, alcoholic or non-alcoholic, big brewery or small brewery on the world. And we're incredibly proud of that. Mm. And we've also done Low Life recently, which is our take on like an American low alc beer. And again, similarly, everyone just jumped at it. They loved it. I think we really respect the love and craft that goes into making something that's so easily accessible, and you know, doing that in a way that's doing what a big brewery does as a small brewery is incredibly hard. And I think we're loved and respected for that, because we don't turn our backs on, like, you know, basic things. And you can't hide. If it's a lager, if it's a good IPA, you can't hide behind throwing mango and stuff in there. We don't look out to hide bad beers. We kind of split between the two. And when we know we're going to do something simple and do it beautiful, like that's a beer that's accessible to everyone. I can send them to my mum and she loves them. And then the other hand, if we want to do a cookie beer or something, we did some absolutely brilliant pastry beers this year. We know not everyone's going to drink it, and people might look at it and roll their eyes, but they can still drink us.
I mean, I have to say, so I'm probably the wrong member of the pop culture team to be here, because I'm the one who has never been a drinker at all. So I have never taught myself to like beer. And I feel like there is a stage for a lot of people, they go through it as a teenager, in theory at 18, but in practice usually much earlier, where they teach themselves, right, to like beer. I've never done that.
Yeah.
I mean, would Mash Gang beers still be for me? Like, is this something, is it not too late, basically, for me to suddenly become a beer drinker?
No, absolutely. I think we are the perfect brand for people like you. When we did Hop City at Leeds, the Northern Monk like craft beer festival, 2 years in a row, absolutely and utterly blown away when the doors opened, the first people to rush through and come up to us and fanboy were people that looked like you. It was, you know, we put skeletons and melting face and stuff on cans, but we know half our drinkers are women. And we know, because we make these big, delicious beers, that people look at it and they go like, if I'm going to have some friends over for an afternoon, we basically are the non-alcoholic version of Bailey's. And it's a talking point. You go like, I've got this beer, which is dark blue. It's orange creamsicle flavored IPA. And, you know, it has a lovely description of the hops and similar on the back. But we know from when friends have used us for beer tastings at like events, people are surprised and delighted that, you know, these beers are they're big and fun. And I think that's the exact kind of thing it's exciting to people that don't drink beer. We know that 80% of the people that drink Mash Gang also drink full ABV beers. Mm-hmm. Which is different. We rock the trend by having 50% female drinkers, but we also appeal to older and younger drinkers. And amongst younger drinkers, they're people that may never drink full ABV alcohol. Mm-hmm. They just have made a choice not to have it. So if you're 20 and you're given the choice of having like a non-alcoholic gin and tonic, which if you have no connection to the alcoholic version of it, it's basically like drinking fizzy lemon juice. They're going to go, well, I don't want that. I want the big melting face exploding motorbike pig beer, which tastes like raspberry pudding and it's neon green. That's exciting.
A raspberry pudding has drawn me in. But you do raise another issue that I wanted to ask about, which is that the craft beer world has been notable for having incredible design. There are a lot of times when I'm in like a little shishi pub or a deli or something, and they've got a lineup of craft beers, and I'm like, I mean, I suddenly want to drink, because those are just beautiful containers. Is that something that you guys have worked on a lot as well? Because I know you've got quite kind of stripped back labels for your, you know, everyday orderable by the KS beers on your website, but you also do some much more out there designs.
Oh yes, we're all big design nerds, essentially. Like half the team are neurodiverse in some way or another, and we all love trains and we love artwork and classic logos and designs and color schemes and so on and so forth. And we bring that to life. Like we work with some of our favorite designers. There's a chap who's a member of Combat Wounded Veteran, who are an incredibly niche like American power violence band from the 90s and noughties. And Chris does some absolutely beautiful artwork for us. Because Jordan as well comes from a background of tattooing. We knew great tattooing artists. We knew great people that work in music that happen to do artwork. And we say, like, we think you are the right person to do this particular piece. And because of that, we have a really broad palette. I know lots of other breweries would love to work with the people we work with, but aside from that, they wouldn't be bold enough, because they think, you know, if we step away from our traditional kind of branding, people won't know it's us. Mm. We're incredibly proud to come from that background of tattooing, street art, and like generally loving design. Mm. The label for Stoop has got such a long and winding history to it, but the version you see on Stoop and Stoop Extra Dry, particularly in Extra Dry, actually, it's got the additional sheaths and bits of scrolls and stuff added to it, and those actually come from classic Japanese beer can designs from like the 1940s.
Right.
I don't think we've ever talked about this, but people wouldn't know. Mm. And like when we did National Anthem, so National Anthem is the cherry cola ice cream float stout we did. And it has three references to Lana Del Rey on the canon and the artwork. Again, like, this is a massive spoiler. No one's known about this. So National Anthem is a Lana Del Rey song. The Ocean Drive tunnel is actually used in the imagery. And it's Cherry Cola, which is the opening lyric of a song of one of her more famous albums. And we just stuff culture into everything. And sometimes people get it and they love it, and sometimes they don't. And we feel that if you don't get it, it's still accessible. You can still enjoy it.
That's so fun, though, because it is something for the nerds who are following every release that you do and every single thing to really pick up on and pick apart. I mean, the same way, if you're lucky, you could have Swifties after you. You know the way Taylor Swift fans decode every utterance, every tweet, every picture? That could be you in a few more years.
It could be. We've got some fans who keep albums of our artwork. And it's beautiful. It's nice because we have this relationship with them. So we can go like, oh, do you happen to have that label? Because like, I can't remember when we did this or that. There was a point where in order to fit additional nutritional things and like we had to put stuff in different languages because we export all over the world now. We had to take the founders' portraits off the can. We didn't think anyone noticed because, you know, it's pictures of five like ugly guys. And the reaction with people like, why have you taken your faces off?
It's
very sweet.
That's very sweet. You're not ugly for this. I've seen pictures of all five of you. You're not. It's fine. But tell me, so what's been the most successful things? Have there been things that surprised you? Have there been things that you thought were going to be a surefire massive hit and have just been kind of a bit more niche? Has it gone that way?
The thing that we thought would be a surefire hit, which ended up being completely niche. The first Halloween we were together, we did a Halloween beer, and the sales of it, like pre-order sales, were incredible, and it died in the tank. It failed. So we had to refund everyone, or we gave them like a different beer instead. And because of that, when it came around to the second year, we were like, all right, we'll do another Halloween beer. We'll make it bigger and sillier than before. And we did it, and people bought it because they enjoyed opening cans because it poured green blue. And, you know, it looked like something from a horror film. And people enjoyed getting it and opening it, but people only got one because no one really wants to drink a green blue like 4 or 5 times. So we learned quite quickly that those kind of event beers don't have to have massive supplies because otherwise you end up sitting with them in a warehouse somewhere. But the biggest surprise we had was everyone said stouts don't sell in summer.
Right.
And we're not directed by trends or forecasting or sense. So we did a run of maybe 6 or 7 stouts this summer. Everyone loved them, but they sold out immediately. The Cherry Cola one was one. We did a coffee and donut stout. They absolutely flew. And people like, you know, you can't do this. Stout is a all year round beer. It's just a case of people don't talk about it in summer. And the other thing as well is when you think of stout, sometimes you get like a nice chilled Guinness. And we basically told people to put it in the fridge, and it brought out notes of the beer that people didn't normally notice from like, you know, dark chocolatey warm stouts. You put it in the fridge, suddenly it's pulling out notes of the cherries, and there's an additional layer of scent going on. And some of the more bitter ends in the hops, we spend a lot of time working with universities and partnerships to figure out different things. So Jordan and James are massive about bioengineering and changing the way we do stuff. We are without a doubt one of the most science first breweries in the UK, which is something we again don't really talk about. You're getting so many weird exclusives which don't ladder up to much. If anyone's trying to rip us off, just listen to us talk. We spill all the secrets. But because of some of these things we do, like, I'm fascinated that at different temperatures different flavors dissipate or become more pronounced. I've had beers by breweries that I've loved, and I've thrown them in the freezer to cool them down quicker. When I've taken them out, they've been a couple of degrees too cold, and I've gone, it tastes like trash. It's water. What have they done? They've changed a hot bill. Oh, I've made a cheaper product for a supermarket. I take one out of the fridge an hour later, I'm like, oh no, it's fine. The big surprise we had was stouts. And the funny thing is, being us, we have no stouts in the range this winter. We're releasing like half a dozen lagers. And, you know, lagers, delicious. Ice cold in -2 degree temperatures as well.
Why not? Turn it upside down. So, I mean, I read one interview with, I think, Jordan talking about the ambition is not just beer. The ambition is kind of everything.
Yeah. You know,
expansion in new directions, experiments with coffee, experiments with energy drinks, experiments with you name it. Is this very much medium to long term? Is this short to medium term? How are you thinking about some of this stuff?
It's all of the above. So we never intended to be a brewery. We started out making jam. We have released a jam, actually. We have our first adaptogenic soda came out recently, dope soda. We essentially, when the team were in the US, we were like, everyone from PBR through to all these microbreweries are like, oh, they're now doing like CBT oil, weed, beer and stuff. And we were like, this is fascinating. And we can't do 7/8 of that in the UK because of laws. So we're like, you know, Impossible Brew, like, shout out to Mark as well. Like, they're really close to us, and we've done a collaboration with them. We put together our arginine-centered bill of additional bits that made you... it's their social mix, essentially. It makes you more perky and happier. And we were like, right, how do we do something else that's interesting around this? We started tinkering some of the stuff, and this whole idea of, like, it could be a soda. Like, ice cream's going to be massive for us. Like,
right.
If you think about people like Ben and Jerry's, they've done ice cream and they've taken it as far as you can go in that direction, and we want to take it in a completely different direction, but one that's equally as mash gang as any of the stuff we've mentioned above. It's like, can we throw in loads of ingredients that don't necessarily go in ice cream and see what happens?
See what happens.
But we have every intention of doing coffee, energy drinks, and everything you said. It was really interesting. The grocer picked up that we trademarked those stuff. We actually talked about it. Because it became a case that we had conversation with the ideas that we wanted to do, but like it was a moment of like everything's kind of a lot more public now. And that's something we've not really had to deal with before, to be honest. We're still a small company, and suddenly we've had a really busy year. We won a bunch of awards. Jordan was nominated for Brewer of the Year twice in a short period of time by like the most respectable people on earth. He was in Persil Magazine's 19 most influential people globally in food and drink this year. Amazing. At the start of the year. I was in one of the top three stories of PR Week yesterday when I joined here. I think our profile's grown at a rate we weren't anticipating, which is great because there's another three founders we can turn the spotlight on now and they can all deal with it. But I think a lot of the product innovation we're doing, it's stuff that breweries wouldn't traditionally do. And I think that's probably because we're not traditionally a brewery.
Yeah. It also gives you the freedom, like because you're not paying the mortgage on a brewery and having a certain set level of costs that you have to deal with every month, you do have a little bit more freedom to brainstorm. We don't call it brainstorming anyway. Blue sky ideas and yeah, come up with new things.
We can blue sky things. This is it. We're in a situation we can upscale and downscale really quickly. Mm. So if we create something and it works, we can just, you know, do much more of it a lot quicker than someone else would have to if they had to build a brewery or get tanks or what have you.
Yeah. So tell me and tell the listeners, more to the point, where can they get Mash Gang? I mean, obviously you have a website, which we should probably mention.
At mashgang.beer, I think it's mashgang.shop as well. It's both.
And you are stocked in various places around the country as well.
Yes, we're in, if you go to your local bottle shop, you should be able to find us. If you can't, tell them to order us. We've not done a lot of draft. And one of the reasons we've not done draft is because no alk draft is super challenging. Because if you get bacteria in any of the couplings or something, suddenly your 0.5% beer becomes a 5% beer, or like it just goes sour. We think we've had big breakthroughs in no alk draft. So next year we're going to really, really, really push. We want to be on the rail in every great craft pub and mainstream pub, hopefully. In the UK, we'd like to be in every sports stadium. Everywhere you'd think, I want to have a drink, but I don't want to drink 2 pints of Coke while watching a football match.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
So yeah, that is the Mash Gang. It's a really interesting kind of approach to a business to start with that no alcohol standard, I guess.
It is. I'm just also completely obsessed by their background in music, by that punk attitude and aesthetic, sort of leaning into brewing. The fact that so many of them are apparently neurodiverse is wonderful. Obviously, I identify with that whilst having absolutely no plans to expand my remit into becoming Elton John's personal photographer or brewing beers. But the thing that really blew my mind about this, and I think this is again where I can just become fairly rigid about my ideas of drinks and what they can do in general, was the flavours that they were making, the colours that they were doing. Craft brewers in particular get this joy of being able to be a bit more flexible, particularly if they have a decent audience over email and through social media, is just being able to make up these insane, incredibly imaginative and creative limited editions and just be like, oh, guys, we made this. It's blue and green. Enjoy.
Go nuts. Yeah, absolutely. Why not be imaginative? Why not have fun with it, you know? And I love that they are doing that and clearly developing quite a passionate following that is then encouraging them towards new madness or insanity or delight, depending on your point of view. So I think it's wonderful.
Community really is incredibly important. And more seriously, one of those sayings that does the rounds is that community is the opposite of addiction. Basically, being able to feel invested in a brand, almost like a drinks family, being excited about what on earth they're going to come up with next is just brilliant. And I also really love the way that so many brands now are doing these limited edition drinks, whether it's changing things up in summer or bringing darker, more sort of evergreen things through in winter. It's just fantastic and it keeps everything fresh. And it also just keeps your tongue alive, Helen. Why did I say that? That's really creepy.
No, I like it. I don't want my tongue to be alive and have its own opinions, but equally it sounds bad to have a dead tongue. So it's somewhere in the middle there. In my call out for people's favourite alcohol-free beer, overwhelmingly people were saying the Guinness 0% is just a banger, apparently. And I feel a sort of national pride that I probably should try it. I'll work up to it, maybe. Peroni also came in for a lot of praise. And then a variety of craft beers and things like this. Brooklyn Lager Special Effects.
That's very good.
Kinnegar Low Tide, which has the most charming can ever. It has a small dog on it, Kat. You'd
love
it.
Oh my God, Googling this immediately. Thank you.
Lucky Saint came through.
Yes, Will recommended that on our Helen McGinn episode. I've had a few of those and that's a really decent lager. It's got flavour all the way through, if that makes sense to literally anybody. But yeah, no,
sounds good to me. And Big Drop came in. That's, I think that's one of the big names in the alcohol-free whoop, world whoop. As well. That's got a few mentions. Even someone who got through two pregnancies and breastfeeding cycles on Corona Zero. That's from @chocoholic132. She says, I'm furious. As it turns out, what I missed the most was a bottle of beer in the sun or while cooking dinner. Extensive testing shows it really does taste the same. I drink it often now as it's cheaper. Fair play.
They really are, actually. I suppose that's one of the things that feels almost counterintuitive, given how like significant the price of drinking a non-alcoholic cocktail or spirit or something can be in a posh bar or a restaurant. Like those can still be around the same price as an alcoholic drink. Like non-alcoholic beers, entire bottles of non-alcoholic fizz, like really, really reasonable. We're talking £2-3. So it is a bit more exciting than picking up the same six pack of your usual soft drink. I had no idea there was a Corona Zero, though. Well, it's a very popular summer beer anyway, because it's all the branding, the sort of very, I'm on holiday and this is fabulous. And you normally get it with like a
slice
a
of lime
wedge. Yes, exactly.
And so, I know from the Fast and Furious films.
Of course. I mean, that's another conversation entirely. If we ever get our lovely friend Manisha Ferdinand on, I'm fairly sure we could make an entire tasting menu of non-alcoholic versions of the drinks that they have throughout the Fast and the Furious franchise.
They're very big into their Corona, and Corona means family, I guess, for them. So who am I to argue? Well, if you have a favourite drink or a menu that you'd like to celebrate or shame from somewhere that you visited, or really any burning questions about soft drinks in general or particular, then do email us at popculturedrinkspodcast@gmail.com or on Instagram, we are @popculturedrinkspodcast. We went for a really small, you know, manageable handle. I think that's the main thing. We also have a lovely bookshop storefront where you can go and shop for our favourite non-alcoholic books, books by us and books by our guests. So if you go to bookshop.org and search for Pop Culture, the Soft Drinks Podcast, that should come up. And I think that's it for this episode, isn't it?
I think it is. If you consider subscribing, that would be wonderful, or leaving us a lovely 5-star review on your podcast provider of choice. We will remember you in our wills, not with actually anything, but just we will remember you and thank
fondly.
You for it. We'll see you back here next week for more soft drinks chat. Lots of love. Bye.
Cheerio.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.